Tomorrow is not just Super Tuesday, it's also Mardi Gras. And my next guest is a filmmaker, originally from Mobile, Alabama, where they've been celebrating Carnival and Mardi Gras even longer than the folks in New Orleans. In Mobile, the festivities are largely segregated along racial lines. Margaret Brown went back to her hometown and made a documentary about this parade and bead and music-filled holiday, a film called The Order of Myths that explores the line between tradition and plain old racism. Hi, Margaret.
Hi.
Happy Mardi Gras Eve.
Thanks.
So talk to me about the title, the Order of Myths. That's the name of Mobile's oldest mystic society. Can you tell me what a mystic society is and does?
A mystic society is a secret society, and it's usually just men or just women, and it's sort of like an adult fraternity. And in Mobile, it's largely segregated also along racial lines. It's either a black mystic society or a white mystic society.
And do these secret societies have a hierarchy? Like, do some have better floats and beads and treats to throw out?
Well, I think everyone thinks that their parade is probably has the best treats and throw the hardest or whatever. But I also, the way it's organized is the Order of Myths, which is the title of the film, is the oldest constantly parading mystic society in the whole country. And so that parade happens on the last night of Mardi Gras, which is tomorrow, Fat Tuesday. And kind of the hierarchy sort of works backward from that day, with the second oldest organization being a little bit earlier that day, I believe, and the third maybe the day beforehand.
And you grew up just being in this environment. This is what everybody in Mobile comes to know and love.
Well, I don't think everyone in Mobile loves it exactly. There's a lot of people who don't like it and leave town. But I think most people really love it in Mobile. I mean, it's something for the kids. Kids like to go to the parades, but also my family also is very involved in it. My mother was the Mardi Gras Queen in 1966, and my grandfather is actually in the Order of Myths, the mystic organization.
Now in Mobile, there's a black king and queen and a white king and queen, but they're two different but parallel coronations and courts and million-foot dress trains. When you filmed last year, the black king and queen came to the coronation of the white king and queen for the first time ever.
Yes.
What happened?
Well, I think what happened was I was interviewing the black queen, Stephanie Lucas, and she told me that she was planning on going with Joseph Roberson. It was a surprise to us as well, and Joseph Roberson is the black king. And so we didn't know really what was going to happen. We knew we were filming it already, but we didn't know how they'd be received or, what would happen.
And Stephanie, who was the black queen, she's a school teacher.
Yes.
And we learned that it's going to cost her $20,000 to be the queen.
I think it's variable what people spend, but I think it's sort of like $20,000 and up what people spend on being a queen or a king.
But why? What is it? That costs so much.
I know. It's just you represent. I think for them, it's just they're representing the city, and that's just, I don't know what it costs in Mobile. I mean, I think it's something not everyone can afford, that's for sure.
Right, and that was on her school teacher salary.
Yes.
But, I mean, just for people who haven't seen your film, give them a sense of the pomp and circumstance. First of all, she wears this train that's probably, 30 feet long?
I know that her train, I think it weighed 100 pounds, and you have to sort of learn how to pull it. And, I mean, I remember seeing the movie Marie Antoinette and thinking, wow, that looks a lot like my film. it looks a lot of the photographs, they look like they're from another era or something. That's what the coronation looks like. It's very sort of based in this, old European tradition. It doesn't look like something you would expect coming out of Mobile, Alabama, unless you would know in advance.
Well, you mentioned from another era, and that's what it certainly seems like when you start looking at the themes of segregation. And you have a number of people in the film, both black and white, saying, yes, Mardi Gras and Mobile is segregated, but that's the way they want it. It's a tradition. And if that's the way they want it, what's so wrong with that?
I mean, I don't think segregation is right, it was sort of interesting to come in and see that no one really wanted it to change. I wonder, after watching the film, if people in Mobile will feel the same way.
Yeah, I want to play a bit of the film. This is Dora Finley, a local historian and community activist, and she's responding to people saying that they want a segregated parade. Let's listen.
We can all kind of skirt around and say, well, they like it like that. And I think that's kind of what everybody wants to say. Well, because we don't have a choice.
Did you get a sense that one side or the other was more comfortable with saying we want it this way because it's tradition? I mean,
I think definitely it's so complicated, and that's what I found going in. I mean, I have my views about what I think, and the community didn't necessarily go along with you know, what I thought going in.
Which community? Both black and white?
Both communities, yeah. When we were screening the film at Sundance, I mean, Joseph Roberson, the Black King, said on stage in the Q&A afterward that he thought, you know, it should remain separate, that each tradition should remain separate. But, you know, I think sort of, why can't we move forward and create a different tradition? You know, it seems like it was sort of shocking to me that people were still wanted to remain divided that way.
I was surprised to learn that the last slave ship in American history landed in Mobile, Alabama, and it seems like something people in Mobile are very aware of. Will you tell the story of that ship?
Well, this ship is called the Clotilda, and it came in Mobile largely because there was a bet made that this ship could be smuggled in to Mobile in 1859, and it was successfully smuggled, although discovered, and so the ship was burned to the ground. Everyone escaped from the ship, but the family, Helen Mayer, who is the queen of Mardi Gras, the white queen this year, or last year now, she's a descendant of the captain who brought that ship to the country.
Right, and even both sets of kings and queens were descendants of people on either in charge of the slave ship or on it.
Well, right. Stephanie, we found out after Mardi Gras when I was interviewing Stephanie's grandparents that her grandfather revealed in the interview that he was descended from that ship, and that ended up really focusing the film because it just sort of showed sort of how far back the separation was,
right.
I felt.
And knowing that they were descendants of slaves who are on the ship that the, you know, white queen's ancestors had brought over. Didn't that bother them?
Yeah, definitely. I know it made Helen uncomfortable. It's something that probably if that was in your family, you really wouldn't want to talk about. But, you know, she came to Sundance and spoke for the film. And I think her, you know, ability to do that. And she knew also that that was in the film months before. And so I told her, you know, this is going to be in the film and I want you to come to Sundance and, you know, be on stage with me and Joseph and Stephanie. And I just felt like this could be something really interesting and possibly a movement forward in the community.
You grew up in Mobile. You're white. What did you think of it when you were a child and a teenager?
You know, when I was a child and a teenager, I didn't even know about the Black Mardi Gras in Mobile. I mean, that's how sort of separate or ignorant I was.
How is that possible? It goes through a different part of town completely?
No, it doesn't. Although I'm not sure that when I was a child it did or didn't. I know that as a child I only went to the parades that had white participants. You know, it was only as I grew older that I went to the MAMGA, which is the Black Parade on Mardi Gras Day. I went to that as I was more of an adult. But, I mean, I didn't know about it, and I think that says a lot.
Talk to me about those Q&As at Sundance. Were there other tense moments there?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, it was interesting to bring, you know, they hadn't, the people who were in the film, they hadn't seen the film until we got to Sundance and we watched it, you know. So I think I wanted to prepare them for the screening because I think, like, being in Mobile, it's people accept it there, like this idea of tradition and things being separate. And at Sundance, I didn't know how that would be received or if people would be nice to them and respect them and their viewpoints. And for the most part, they did. But I think there was one Q&A where there's a character in the film named Britton Youngblood. And she...
It's right out of a Flannery O'Connor novel, that name, right?
Yeah, it's a great name. And she is sort of positions herself in the film as a liberal debutante. And she was raised by a Black woman. And one of a member of the audience, a Haitian filmmaker who was actually a friend of mine, kind of raised his hand and said, you know, this relationship is not just a one of love. It's a power dynamic. And, you know, I don't think that's acknowledged. I don't know if you acknowledge that, really. And she started crying on stage and said, you know, I love her, and it's not a power dynamic. And Joseph Roberson kind of came forward and defended her and said that's how she was raised. And it was interesting just to see how the people, you know, in Mobile, who'd sort of been befriending each other over the weekend, sort of, I don't know, they were sort of almost defending each other in front of the audience, you know, and their bond was growing deeper.
Do you think that the act of filmmaking when you were there affected people's behavior as well? Because I think it's interesting that there were some groundbreaking changes when you were there.
I mean, I think the act of introducing a camera always influences. I do think when you film people over a long period of time, they get more accustomed to it. And by the time that we filmed some of the coronation and some of the sort of more impactful moments in the film, I think everyone was very comfortable with the cameras being there. But yeah, I mean, I do think the camera always influences. And I do wonder if Joseph and Stephanie would have been asked to
the
walk
black
around.
King and Queen.
Yes, if the camera hadn't been there, I wonder.
Hmm. Are they going to be asked to walk around this year?
I think now it's a tradition.
Do you think you started that tradition?
I don't know. I mean, I know Stephanie and Joseph don't think so. And, you know, I would hope that it would have started anyway.
Finally, our northern listeners might not know what moon pies are, but they play a very large role in the carnival celebrations. Can you describe a moon pie?
A moon pie is like a chocolate treat with like it's like a chocolate covered graham cracker with a marshmallow in it. And
they come in banana too, don't they?
They have banana, they have strawberry. I think they have strawberry. There's a pink color. I think it's strawberry.
Yeah, they call it strawberry. Yeah. They just color it pink.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of hydrogenated palm oil going on.
Yeah, there is.
The
yeah.
kids go nuts.
I just had one before coming, actually. We had moon pies that the moon pie company sent us for Sundance, and that's like all I have in my office right now to eat. So that's
Yum.
All I've eaten all day is moon pies.
Margaret, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you.
Margaret Brown is the director of the documentary The Order of Myths, which recently premiered at the Sundance Film Festival. You can learn more about Margaret's projects at our website, morefairgame.org.